the Deco Retro program here on Planet FM. We will bring you interesting interviews, updates of future deco, modern, retro, and other related events. Also the stories that celebrate New Zealand's history and its people, as well as book reviews and other snippets capturing the glamour and fascination of a bygone era.
Deco Retro.
Good afternoon, listeners. I'm Philippa, and today our program is about the Chateau Tongariro, considered by many to be a New Zealand icon. When I heard that the Chateau Tongariro was not going to be restored, maybe closed for good, I felt a deep sense of loss and nostalgia. This gracious landmark, set in such splendour at the foot of Mount Ruapehu, would now be left to slowly decay and come derelict. Such a sad fate for such a grand Neo-Georgian hotel. The chateau was opened in 1929 to accommodate tourists during the early days of skiing at Whakapapa. The chateau was, and remains, set in a wild gate. And it is that landscape that is both the reason for its existence and the cause of its many challenges. The Tongariro National Park, one of New Zealand's outstanding conservation areas, came into being as a result of the gift to the nation from the Tufaratoa people of the land surrounding, including the three great volcanic mountains, Ruapehu, Naruhoe, and Tongariro. The original area of 2,006 hectares was subsequently extended by acquisition of surrounding lands to the present size of 75,000 hectares to become New Zealand's first national park, the fourth in the world to be recognised as a World Heritage Area. In the 1920s, the New Zealand government, under Prime Minister Gordon Coates, recognised that there existed a vast potential for the development of a tourism industry in this country, a very far-sighted concept at that time. There was, however, a need to provide facilities of international standards at the heart of the Tongariro National Park to enable the public to enjoy walking, climbing, and tramping in the summer months and to encourage development of the sport of skiing, already popular in Europe, but very much in its infancy in New Zealand in those days. With the government keen to get things underway, a notable architect of the day, Herbert Hall of Timaru, was commissioned to design the hotel. He was strongly influenced in his thinking by the magnificent hotels in Canada built by Canadian Pacific Railways, providing huge floor-to-ceiling windows in the lounge, make the most of the outstanding panoramic views available from the elevated site. In its finishings and furnishings too, the hotel set out to meet ultimate demands of the sophisticated traveller and basins and hot and cold water in its bedrooms. Elaborate decor in the public rooms and specially made high-quality furniture throughout. The builder selected to carry out this remarkable contract was James Fleck, then an enterprising young businessman, making an impressive name for himself in the construction industry. The total cost of the scheme came to $100,000 and included a golf course. To ensure that the high standards of the buildings were maintained and that the service provided to guests, most of the staff, when Chateau Tongariro opened to the public, had been recruited overseas, bringing to the hotel a degree of professionalism in all departments not been seen in New Zealand before. Not surprisingly, this, plus the superb situation in which it stood, attracted to the hotel from the outset guests drawn from all over the country. Many of the leading figures in New Zealand's business, political and social life and their families became regular visitors during the gracious years of the 1930s. Some coming annually during the August school holiday period, or at Christmas, when a busy schedule of balls, parties and other festivities rapidly built up an exciting tradition of social occasions, which further enhanced the hotel's growing reputation. A swish of ball gowns on the stairs. Presence of elegant gentlemen in full evening dress at the dances established the hotel as a magical palace of luxury, refinement, and romance, unequaled elsewhere. However, that was age. With the onset of the Second World War, Chateau was closed to the public in the years 1942 to 90, during which time it functioned as an auxiliary asylum. Following an earthquake in the Wellington region, which severely damaged the Porirua Psychiatric Hospital, and later at the end of the war as a rest and recuperation centre for returning Air Force personnel. It seems that most old hotels a resident ghost. Chateau is no exception. During the time when the hotel was serving as a psychiatric hospital, Charlie, the resident ghost, made his first appearance. He was apparently a patient who had also told stories of a nurse named Charlotte, who was said to have died in one of the rooms. Apparently Charlotte continues to make her presence felt hotel, particularly in a room said to be the favourite. Staff and guests also report mysterious instances of fires stuttering in their fireplaces and curtains moving as if blown by a strong breeze, despite no breeze being felt. Many also remark on the hotel's resemblance to the Overlook Hotel, which was based on the notoriously haunted Stanley Hope Hotel in Colorado. Over the years, a number of people have reported strange happenings when staying at the hotel, particularly in the old wing. It would seem that the presence of former staff, patients and soldiers still linger within the walls and halls of this remote landmark building, adding to its mystery. During the years it was in operation, the original chateau endeared itself to many New Zealand individuals and families who were regular visitors, some throughout the entire period, and played an important part in their lives during that time. If this Category 1 historic building is closed for good, New Zealand will lose an important part of its social and architectural history. A fond farewell then to the New Zealand icon that holds, for many of us, special memories of time. But, before we finish the program today, Julie Hill, whose father was a manager at Atto, 1948 to 1949, will tell us about some of his experiences during the time he was a manager at Atto. Thanks for joining us, Dave, Julie.
Oh, no. Pleasure, Philippa.
What did your father tell you about his manager at Atto?
The beginning of the story is when the chateau was actually shut for 6 years, and the final 2 years, a lot of refurbishment was done to get it ready to open again to the public. Yes. That occurred in August 1948. And just as an aside, a number of the workforce that helped with that were actually prisoners from the local prison farm in the area.
Oh, really?
And that connection remained over quite a period of time, because a number of the prisoners would come to work or do maintenance while the chateau was running as a first-class hotel.
No, I heard that they actually stayed there.
I'm not sure about that, but I do know that my mother had a concern that she would leave me as a baby in the manor suite.
Yes.
And she came back to find a prisoner was in there working away on some...
Oh.
So in those days, you can imagine it, concerns like that.
Yes.
Fondly felt by mothers of little babies.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
So Mr. Bayfield was the manager. He was there at the reopening party, which was a hotel full of guests, and that was the date of 20th of August, 1948.
Oh, were there many notable people attending?
It was mostly locals from the area in Whanganui.
Oh.
So it was more a local event.
Yes.
I'm sure there were notable people. There was certainly the general manager of the Department of Tourist and Health Resorts, ultimately the owner of the show. So Mr. Bayfield and his wife was always husband and wives, and the wives always had a role within the management team. They had obviously worked very hard during the refurbishments, and so not long after the Chateau opened, Mr. Bayfield went off on a holiday. And my father came down from Auckland to be his relieving manager. My father had been in Auckland, he was the Assistant Mathematician and Tourist Bureau, and he had experience of being in hotels. He worked at home as a young houseboy. When he was very young, he'd worked in Rotorua. And so he was shoulder tapped to go down and relieve at the Chateau. And the story that happens at the same time was that my mother was very concerned about her wardrobe suitable for such an event.
Oh.
And I had to ask a friend who was a wonderful dressmaker to make up a wardrobe. So they took off to the Chateau with me as a baby. I was of an age where I wasn't walking. So I was under 9 months, I guess. And not long after they were there, it was suddenly a disaster. Something very tragic happened. Mr. Bayfield, while on holiday, died. And that was in November 98.
Hmm.
So that was when my father found himself there permanently in the role as the manager.
Yes.
And that then became, he had to get into the Christmas season without very much time to prepare, because Christmas at the Chateau was certainly a very big event.
Oh, yes.
And in later years, I've actually met a woman whose name I sadly cannot remember, but I met her at a function at the Chateau about 12 years ago, and she used to go through to the Chateau for lunch every year.
Yeah.
For decades.
A decade, yeah, wonderful.
Mm-hmm. It was such a special occasion. So the story, one of the dad's stories about that actual Christmas Day was that he was in the dining room. The manager's table would always be sort of a centrepiece, and friends or notables would like to be sitting in the manager's table.
Yeah.
And my father noticed all of a sudden that the dining room was empty of staff.
Oh.
No, there was no waiting staff, nobody seen. And my father got up and went into the kitchen to see what was going on and why the staff was suddenly not doing what they needed to do.
Yeah.
And he found that the chef had drunk too much on Christmas morning and was very, very drunk and waving a very big butcher's knife around.
Oh, goodness.
And it terrified all the staff. So that was one of the dramas that Dad talked about, and how he had...
Well, I think a lot of chefs tended to be alcoholics.
Yes.
From what I've heard in those days.
Yes.
So who disarmed him?
My father did.
Oh, your father did.
My father did. Mm. So I also knew that, I don't know how he disarmed him, but I do know that at the time he was issued with a pistol. I don't think that's I don't think that's unusual.
No.
Because most of the people who would be managers, senior in those hotels, the men would have had military service.
Yes.
And my father suited.
Yes.
But, Philippa, you mentioned about alcohol. I might point out to you another interesting point was the Chateau did not have a liquor licence.
Oh!
And the Chateau only got its liquor licence in 1950.
Do you think some people had a bit of wine in their handbag?
They had a very nice bar, but the bar was for guests only.
They could have a drink. They clanked their drink to the table.
I can't tell you.
No, but you couldn't have a bottle of wine.
I know the bar was a very, very, very special place.
Yes.
After a day's skiing, to come down, change before dinner and go to the bar to have a drink.
It's very civilised.
Very,
very, very nice.
Yes. Mm. Now, another story?
Yes, oh yes, please, yes, please.
Keep going.
Keep going.
The Chateau, the tourist department, actually employed one of the first ski instructors to come out from Switzerland, and his name was Walter Hainsley. And I have a photo of me sitting on his shoulders as a baby.
Oh.
And my mother said he just took off with me on his shoulders and went
on skiing. Yes. With you?
Yes, yes.
Oh.
Yes.
She must have had a fit.
She must have had a fit.
She didn't forget it. No, she thought goodbye. Goodbye, Julie.
Well, Walter Hainsley was very famous, and he was Swiss, but the year before he had been the coach of the winning US skating at the Olympics. and he loved New Zealand. He came for several ski periods.
Yeah.
But his first ski period, he came to set up the ski school and a ski shop.
Oh.
And he was also one of the founders of Ruapahu Alpine Lifts.
Yes.
Which now know sadly is also fund regularship.
Oh, isn't that sad?
So most people who ski in at Ruapahu, the name of Walter Hainsley would be instantly read.
Yes.
Now,
but what? Oh, because you were too young to remember anything.
Yes, I'm too young to remember.
Of course, you were just a child.
Second, yes. Or the dad said, but. Or the other thing is that I've actually found a lot of what my father said has been reported in the paper.
Oh, well, do tell.
Because at the time they were there was a big eruption in Narahoe.
Mm.
In fact, a very, very big eruption in Narahoe. And I found in papers past in a quote that my father gave that was probably carried in the Whanganui local paper. Most of the reporting during this eruption was by my father to newspapers by telephone. So I read in a telephone interview, Arthur Hill, manager of the chateau, said that last May, this is in February, this is February 1949, so in May 1948 there'd been an eruption of Narahoe, but it was a minor one and it was possible to climb the mountain on that occasion. But now the mountain was certainly not climbable. The air vibrations were felt throughout the day and a noise like an express train travelling over.
Oh, that would have been frightening.
Could be heard continually.
Yeah.
At 9 p.m. at night, a great sheet of flame was visible.
Yes.
People came down off the mountain. People who were staying in huts on the mountain came down and came into the chateau and were accommodated, often just by giving them stretches from a lounge room.
Yeah.
No, the lounge room is
magnificent.
Magnificent.
Yes.
And the window, if you've been in the chateau, you'll remember there's the magnificent window that looks out towards Narahoe. And my dad always said that he used to watch the window during the eruption very, very burned.
Yeah.
That it was going to break and break movement of the window. So they all came through that. No loss of life, but it was also very much an occasion because there were 18 overseas botanists
who were
staying at the hotel and they were getting a bird's eye view of what New Zealand could.
Yeah, they'd never forget it.
They wouldn't know.
So was there an avalanche? Was there an avalanche?
There was a lava flow.
A lava flow.
A small lava flow.
Yes.
But apparently the rocks that were going up into the air were huge and they were hurled 1,000 feet into the air.
Oh, my goodness.
So pilots from planes could see, obviously, plotted a different course. And I do know the other story that I can remember from Dad was about somebody, two young grandma boys coming in Dato, and they'd found diary from a passenger from the plane that crashed, NAC plane that had crashed, Ruapahu the year before.
Oh, really? When they were skiing?
They actually were tramping. They were Auckland grandma school boys.
Yes.
And they found the diary. And
whose diary?
There's an American passenger.
Yeah.
And it was a personal diary. And it was quite some time after the plane had crashed. That was all around that period of time.
Yeah.
And the young boys were very tempted to give it to one of the journalists who were staying at the hotel. My father told them that was not the right thing.
No. Gosh, that's a bandage story.
Yes.
So everyone,
it wasn't NAC, everyone died.
Everyone died.
15 people on the plane died.
Oh.
Again, that's quite an odd vehicle history.
Yeah. Gosh. Now, when I think of those hotels, I always think of the wonderful food that they served up. And it was table d'hote, or, the set menu. Yes. I remember going with my parents.
Yes.
At various times.
Yes. So to go into the dining room, of course, it was super.
And they had a pianist. Often had a pianist playing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they did indeed have a pianist and they had a dance floor.
Yes.
Our snooker table, in that same big lounge. I mean, you know how big the lounge is. Beautiful big fireplace.
Yes, yes. They all had big fireplaces in those.
A friend told me recently that the Chateau's piano came up to Auckland was on sale in roundabout. Oh, and she said it was a white grand piano. I don't know that.
No. No.
Apparently the only thing I took interest in was the billiard table.
Oh, I mean, I'm always thinking, somebody in Auckland ended up with a white grand piano, and I can't remember who it was. One of the celebrities, but, yeah, never mind.
Yeah,
I'm sure it's continuing to enjoy life somewhere.
Yes. Yes. So it is very sad. I mean, you've talked about in the beginning of your opening statements about how sad it is.
Well, it is. Because, I mean, the boomer generation, it was so much part of our childhood memories during school holidays.
Yes.
Going to these THC hotels.
Yes. If you were lucky enough.
Yes. Oh. Yeah.
But children were always, we were told, I returned as a older child of my parents on many occasions. They had many friends who remained sort of the rangers who were, and there's a lot of accommodation. If you remember the chateau, there's a lot of accommodation on the side and behind.
Yes, yes.
And there was also a very big bus garage because a lot of people came through, you'd come by train into National Park and then you'd come by bus, but a lot of people also came from Auckland by bus.
Yeah. Yeah.
Leasing motors were then the bus service.
And briefly, a lot of the staff, you said they came from Switzerland originally.
A lot of the staff were also New Zealanders. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
But always the more senior staff were overseas.
Trained
in hotel stores in Switzerland. And that's true of many of the hotels.
Oh, they were lovely in those days. I mean, I'm going to some of them.
Well, the ones that were closest to the chateau was Wairaki.
Wairaki, I remember going there.
Wairaki was always a sort of...
And tartan carpet. I always remember the tartan carpet.
Very nice. Yeah. Well, the family that succeeded my parents' mansion, the Dennises, they were at Wairaki.
Yeah.
And they'd been at Hermitage.
Yeah.
And they were New Zealanders, actually. One of the few managers who were New Zealand-born and bred, as was.
They were wonderful, those other. It's changed completely now.
And they were family hotel, family-oriented.
And there would always be those publics, the lounges.
Oh, yes.
And where it was, you'd mix and mingle.
Yeah.
And say hello.
Yes.
And see people that you knew, many people.
Well, a lot of the same families used to go during the school holidays, every year.
Yeah.
To some of them.
I think I was about to tell you about children. So the one thing that was the managers or hotel staff kept an eye on was children who would get into lift.
Oh, right.
And go up and down. And the lift, I've seen it recently. Oh. And, of course, it's very old, contained.
Yes.
But I was always told I had to go down the staircase. This is not when I was here with my parents as manager, but when I was an older child.
Oh, those naughty children.
Yes.
Oh, what wonderful memories.
Yes.
That you can recount of those days.
And very special. It was a very, very, very cold and very sudden winter that.
Yeah, but it's nice and warm in those hotels.
Yes.
Oh, they were so lovely and warm.
Yes.
Everywhere.
Yes.
Heated so well.
Yes. And the basement was the drying area.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, well, Julie, I'm not sure. We might just briefly. And anything else you would like to tell us? But just briefly. Look, it's been lovely. Lovely to bring back all those memories.
It has been lovely.
Oh.
It's been very much a deep dive back into 1948, 1949.
And, if you're one of the boomer generation, it brings back those nostalgic memories, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And often, when I am anywhere in the area near Ruapehu, even if I'm not going through Tart.
Yeah.
If you're a Taupo, you hope that you can see the mountain.
Yes.
You hope that the clouds will lift.
But you can see the mountain.
Yes.
Oh, and the air is just so wonderful.
Beautiful place.
Beautiful
place.
Well, Judy, thank you so much for telling us about your family's history.
It's a great pleasure. Thanks for a little bit.
It's been lovely to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Arigato.
If you enjoyed our program today, listen every second Wednesday of the month at 2:10 p.m. or download us anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/DecoRetro. And we would like to thank our sponsors, Club Moderne, Art Deco Society Auckland. We will keep you informed of all future exciting and glamorous events to be held by Club Moderne. For more information, email judith.moore650@gmail.com. That's judith.moore650@gmail.com. Bye for now.